Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 330 for May 6 of 2016, Don Pano's Delta Wing and Le Mans. Watch Auto Line After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Auto Line in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. Mr. Vasilash.
How are you, John?
Another day, another show.
Mm-hmm. The blue shirt day.
And, everybody got the memo here, it looks like. And we should let everybody know, Todd Lasa from Automobile Magazine is with us again.
Hello, John. Good to be back.
It's great to have you here, Todd. And of course, we got to let everybody know our special guest for today is Don Pano's, the chairman, the CEO of Delta Wing Technologies. And Don, it's awesome to have you here. I've been wanting to get you on the show for several years, so the fact that you're here today, to me, is just brilliant.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here and to meet your friends.
Right. So I'm sure I, like much of the rest of the audience, needs to learn more of what Delta Wing Technology Group is all about. But let's just start out with your race car. And what we have to let everybody know is we're actually shooting this show before the Long Beach Grand Prix race, right, where your car is going to be running. You did terrific at the opening of the 24 Hours of Daytona. You had some issues at Sebring, so I'm hoping when this show airs, everybody will already know the results. But you're making progress with your car.
Yeah, the car for all intents and purposes is perfect. I mean, everything we've done. We had problems in the beginning, really, with the architecture of this car and the technology of the improvements with the gearbox for about 13, 14 months to figure out how to solve those problems. And we've sorted those out. At Daytona, we were, we could run as fast as anybody.
You were in the lead. You led for a couple of hours or something?
And all of our drivers always set the fastest time in the car. The problem was there was a minute and 17 seconds with the car parked in the middle of the track with no lights in the dark, and they didn't throw a caution flag.
And your car crashed into it.
Yeah.
Right.
Sebring was good. We went to within 17 minutes of the end. But it had rained at Sebring. There was
a
three-hour red flag. And we had a problem with our ECU from some water, and we brought it in, and we changed it out. And that is connected, part of that's connected to the steering column. And somewhere in the race, it kept, jiggling, and 17 minutes from the end, the steering column broke.
So. I hate when that happens.
Yeah, yeah. We were on the lead lap, too, at the time.
For the viewers that are not familiar with Delta Wing, explain to us how you guys came up with what is arguably one of the most revolutionary designs in the auto industry for quite some time.
Yeah,
I wouldn't even say arguably. It is one of the most revolutionary designs.
Right.
Well, I accept that. I
mean, among them, for sure. Yeah. I don't think you need to qualify it.
I'd like to take a lot of credit for that, but in reality, it was really came out of Chip Ganassi. And Chip Ganassi had this idea for this car to go to Indianapolis and to be an Indianapolis car. Somewhere along the line, in the wisdom of all the great engineers and designers out there who have never seen anything like this, they all said it wouldn't work, it would fly, it wouldn't corner, et cetera, et cetera. And it didn't happen. It didn't become an Indy car, spec car. A little later on, we got involved into the American Le Mans series and approached the ACO in France, the organizers of Le Mans, to get it into Garage 56.
Which is for special one-off kind of race cars.
Technology cars. And can't get points, and you're racing in the race, but you're just showing technology. And, in fact, we got an invitation for it to go there in 2012. and the car ran for 6.5 hours perfectly, ran competitively, although they did give us the time brackets that we had to stay within because they didn't want us pushing with people that had a chance to win the Le Mans. So we stayed within those time frames. We did show on practice nights before the weekend that we could run 6 or 7 seconds a lap faster, but we stayed within those constraints. We were staying competitive, and then we were hit by the Toyota, if you remember the pictures of Le Mans, and knocked into
the wall. Watched it live.
Walked, knocked into the wall. And you know at Le Mans, once you go off, that's it. You're not getting back in the race. Although that driver tried to push it, corral it, caress it, talk to it, kick it, and he couldn't get it going, so that was it.
So why did people think the car was going to fly? I mean, because of the...
narrow front end.
Very narrow front end, and then it goes back and...
Right.
I heard other people say ahead of time, there's no way that thing can turn. Yeah. I mean, you know, turn at speed.
Yeah. Well, it's the whole concept of the delta wing is 50-50-50. 50% of the weight, 50% of the horsepower, and 50% of the fuel. And
in other words, it's such a light car, such an aerodynamic car, you can put in a much smaller engine and it burns half the fuel of a other race car of comparable performance.
That's right. We're running, at Sebring and Daytona, we're running about 350 horsepower, and the prototypes are running 650.
And you were running competitive laps against them.
Yeah, and at half the fuel. We're on a 10-gallon fuel tank, and we were getting about a lap more.
And how much of a weight advantage do you have versus those other cars? Can you talk about the...
That car is about 540 kilos, and they're 1,000, over 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 50-50-50.
Yeah.
And the reason why it works is it's a fulcrum. The design of this car, if you look at the front, it's narrow. The front tires only have 4 inches of tread on each tire, only... 4 inches of
tread. I've seen bicycles with bigger tires.
Yes, exactly. And it comes back, and 70%, over 70% of the weight is in the rear between the axles, okay? And it's like a fulcrum. If you get all that weight holding everything down, how do you out here pick it up? You know, get a fulcrum to go move a boulder, and you have a stick this big, you can't move it, but get a big, long stick, you can move it. So... in the architecture, it is about a fulcrum, and it is about the balance of weight.
I had heard, too, that one of the ways that it does corner is that you're actually applying the brakes on the inside wheel. Is that right? On the rear inside?
No, the brakes are normal.
No. But, I mean, for helping the car turn, not only do the front wheels turn, but you're braking the inside rear wheel to help it rotate?
Well, we're breaking the rear wheels, but not one over the other.
Oh, okay. Okay, so the turning comes strictly from the front tires.
And the drivers will tell you with this car that when you go into a corner, you don't have this sensation braking. They have this sensation.
So they're not being thrown forward. They feel like they're going backwards.
Stepping back, right.
So what did you think the first time you saw the design of the car? I mean, you're familiar with I mean, your company has produced...
all kinds of race cars
production cars, street cars, nice sports car looking things. And here's this unusual looking object. And when you saw it, what did you think the first time?
Same as you. This is crazy. I thought it was crazy. And then they came to Petit Le Mans that year, and that was 2010 because given the invitation in 2011. So they came to Petit Le Mans. They'd been just rejected by Indy, and they started to tell me a little bit about it. And Scott Atherton, who was head of our ALMS series then, talked to it. The ACO people were at Petit Le Mans, and we put together a meeting, and they explained the performance of the car. And we... talked about it for a while, and then in January I wrote some letters to the ACO and people and said, look, you know, the car was then being built out at Gurney's place, and we had some testing to do to show that it would corner and it wouldn't fly. And they sent an invitation for Garage 56, and for us to be presented at Garage 56 that year, and then to race the following year in 212.
And how long after Ganassi got the ball rolling on this car did you become involved?
Okay, you got to bear with me for a minute. I'm not a young chicken anymore, but my memory is pretty good. Like I said, this was 2010 that we talked to the ACO. I didn't get involved until the following October in 2011.
Okay. So it was shown at the Chicago Auto Show for the first time in 2010.
Yeah.
And during this period, now when you mentioned the Petit Le Mans, for those who don't know, that was a series that you owned, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's a race that we owned in the American Le Mans series,
okay,
which we owned. Mm-hmm. And that's when they met the French and talked about coming to Garage 56. Mm-hmm. So I didn't actually get involved in it till November of 2011. They had been awarded Garage 56. They're going to be in the process of building the car. There were other people involved, and they weren't getting anywhere. They didn't. They hadn't raised any funding. They'd raised some funding, but it had been spent, and that needed to go forward. So we stepped in, reorganized the company, and started participating in it in November of 2011.
What made you think that it would be successful?
Well, first of all, I don't like to do things everybody else is doing. But it doesn't mean I don't have the normal instinct of everybody else. So when you see something quite outrageous, that you doubt it. But the more I got to look at it and the more I got to think about it, and I wanted to see it be successful even as a bystander, I think that when it came to realize that this had either a chance to go or a chance to die, I decided it should go.
That's
and it
fantastic.
Should be given a fair test.
Now, Nissan got involved at one point, and I know you've told me you can't talk about that right now. I guess there were some lawsuits involved. Is that right?
We are making no comments on
the
case between our suit against Nissan.
Okay, so we won't bring that up anymore, but I just wanted to let the audience know. It's not that we're ignorant of this, but you've warned us you can't talk about that aspect of it.
But it is our Deltoid.
It is your Delta Wing.
Exactly.
Plus, you've got a street car or a road version of this coming.
Yeah, we've come now to develop the road car.
And you're calling that the Delta Wing GT. Carmen, can we bring that picture up? We've got some photos of this thing.
That's it.
So tell us about this.
Well,
when, where, why, how much, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. This is again, doing something that's different. We've taken the architecture of the Delta Wing and incorporated into a vehicle that could be a road car. And the first one that we came up with was this design, which is a GT, but basic chassis and design could also be a 2+2. The GT car, we want it to be competitive, so it's about 340 horsepower, and talk about racing trim. Compared to a Ferrari Porsche 550 horsepower.
But you're saying because of the power-to-weight ratio, you're going to be competitive with
and
them.
And the architectural advantage.
The aerodynamics.
Yes, yep. Aerodynamics is a big thing. When we got this finally designed, a lot of engineering, a lot of CFD analysis, and we wanted to be around 0.25, which we think is a really good number. We got the car designed. The function between the 2+2 and the GT, GT in a gasoline petrol engine is tall. It takes up a lot of room in the back. Unfortunately, Peno's always was front engine, but in this case, this is a rear engine car. And with a 2+2, because it only needs about 80 or 90 horsepower to be a nice family car and efficient, the engine isn't sticking up, so we have plenty of room for two passengers in the back, up to about 6 foot tall. So the GT car is what we're excited about in putting out for racing and as a sports car. It'll cost about somewhere around $100,000.
As the race car?
As a road competitive sports car.
Okay.
And It's going to be, like I said, 340 horsepower compared to their 550. And the road version may be 320 compared to their 525 or 5 whatever. And it'll get good gas mileage, and it will compete.
John's viewers will want to know how soon they can buy one of those.
Well, right now, current status of the car is the chassis for the race car have been built because we want to race it. The buck is done. We're actually out doing the body molds as we talk. And we'll start putting, and the engine and drivetrain is all selected.
Can you tell us whose engine you're using?
We always use Elan engines, but Elan engines buys their engines from Ford or General Motors or whoever, but then we redo them.
You breathe some life into them.
Yeah, we make them a little lighter on their feet. Okay.
So you have an extensive manufacturing facility down in Georgia, Brazelton, yeah. Georgia, is that correct?
Yeah.
So you have autoclaves down there for body panels and engine build and machining.
Yeah.
And
cells, everything.
So you can be a car manufacturer.
Yeah, and we have. We make the Panos Esperantes, mm-hmm. the road cars. And we made 4 Indy winners in a 6-year period of time. We built the kart cars, the last kart cars. Those were ours, built by us. Star Mazda cars, those were all built by us. So. And we do a lot of engine work for independent people, not just our own engine requirements, but for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look back over racing, except for the first year at Le Mans, when I finally decided we needed to do our own engines and not have them done by other well-known engine builders. You look at our history at Le Mans, our engines were superb. And when we won Le Mans in 2006, that car not only set a record for the time distance traveled at Le Mans, but it went on to win the race the next weekend with the same engine, which is unheard of.
That is, especially in that era, at that time frame.
That's 2006.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you basically, Elan engine starts with a Ford or a Chevy block and everything else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, all of our GTR1s and our Le Mans prototypes, that was all the small block, mm-hmm. Ford small block,
mm-hmm.
normally aspirated engine.
Can you say what you're starting with for the new road car?
Excuse me?
Can you tell me whether you're starting with the Chevy or the Ford for the new road car?
We are working because we have another car called the Citigo, which is...
We'll talk about that in just a moment here. But, right.
We're talking to both companies, and we have engines from both companies which are working on. Both of them are suitable for our gearbox, and that gearbox was, for the GT car, really was very important that we've sorted out those issues and we keep using it. We don't need to go back through that development again.
When you talk about the 50-50-50, this has got to be very compelling to companies like General Motors and Ford. When they look at what you guys are doing in terms of lightweighting, downsizing the engine.
Aero.
I mean, have they talked to you and said, hey, you guys have something here in this approach. We need to be with you on this.
I really can't discuss those kind of conversations ongoing now because we are going to license or we're going to do different things, and I don't think it's prudent for me on behalf of our company to talk about which way we're going or who we're doing that with. But I can tell you in the beginning, a nice interesting story is that in 1998, 1 year after we entered racing, we built and raced the first hybrid, affectionately called Sparky. And it won Petit Le Mans in its GT R1 class. And I went to see. I won't say the name, but I went to see the head of research at a famous OEM. And then I went to see another one at another famous OEM. And the answer I got was the same from both people. This is 98. We're not interested in hybrids.
So what is it about the culture in companies like that where they look at innovative things that you guys have that are obviously getting the job done, and yet they say that they're not interested?
I think it's part of, and I can understand this because I've built 2 pharmaceutical groups. I've had a series of resorts. I understand what happens in management. I understand what happens with people. you get, and in extremely large companies, you get into a culture. And the culture has a fence around it, and there's not many gates to get in or out. And once you get in, you certainly a lot of times don't want to find the gate to get out. So, I think it's like us dealing with what we want to deal with in the next step is the EV car. And the new batteries and the new motor technology we have for the electric cars. I think that when you think about that, the OEMs think that an electric car, and also their thinking has been prodded by DOT and the environmentalists and everybody, and grants and CARB credits, et cetera, et cetera. So they now think that's new technology. But what do? They take it and they put it in an old technology car because that's their fence. That's what they're used to. Ferdinand Porsche did the first one in 1892. It's not new technology. I mean, things that developed in electric technology, in our case, like the new motors we got out at DHX and Georgia Tech, the Ultimate is 320 horsepower at about 50 pounds in 8 by 8 inches. Wow. We think of a 1-horsepower motor, it's this big and 100 pounds or 80 pounds, you know. So I think people will start to come along and they start to see this and the proof is in the pudding. They said this car would fly, the Delta Wing. They said it wouldn't corner. We've shown that's not the case. We've shown that with the aerodynamics and design and the CFD that done by independent engineering companies that we can improve performance by 42%. And if we compare that to a Chevrolet Sonic right now, that's 76 miles on the highway. That's about 47 in the city and about 56 miles combined. That meets the 2025 standards right today, right today. So, God bless them. Sometimes it takes them a while. You know, it's like the Titanic. The Titanic wasn't a speedboat. It couldn't turn on a dime. Smaller companies can. And, the Titanic, if it could have turned quicker, it would have missed that iceberg. Yeah. But unfortunately, it didn't.
So, Don, let's go into this electric car that you're working on. You call it the CityGo. Is that right?
CityGo.
So fill in the details. What's this about?
Well, CityGo is a three-wheel car. It's... three-passenger.
We got a picture of it here.
Yeah, that's there. It there.
Also, kind of Delta Wing-ish, very teardrop or bullet-shaped.
It has all the architecture of the Delta Wing. What's important about it is it's got about 35% more storage space than, say, a Prius.
Wow.
Okay.
And this is two-passenger?
It's a three-passenger car.
Okay.
But this can be, you can see
See the seating arrangement.
The seating arrangement.
One in front, two in the rear.
Yeah, and you see the storage area in the back.
It's gigantic.
And this can be an ideal car for an Uber driver. It's green. Or a Lyft driver. It could be an ideal delivery vehicle for small packages like the Amazon people are doing now. It can deliver pizzas as well as anything else. It could deliver...
We had the Domino's pizza truck in here, the other day, right?
It can deliver pizzas. It can deliver groceries.
And this will be pure electric.
It can be electric. But we also will build a petrol version because there are places in the United States that electric cars might not work too well. I mean, there are places with long distances and very cold temperatures in the wintertime. EVs don't work so well.
This is true.
You need an alternative for that. Mm-hmm. But we'll build both. And it's just the difference of the drivetrains in them.
Carmen, bring up that picture of that electric motor. Tell us about this, because what's so interesting is here you've got an electric motor, you've got a soda can next to it for scale, and it's not much bigger than a soda can. And you told me this is what, 20 horsepower?
That's 40 horsepower.
40 horsepower.
That's 40 horsepower. That's a three-phase 40 horsepower electric motor. And that motor will weigh about 30 pounds. And at the SAE show downtown tomorrow, you will see the newest version done in aluminum, because this was all done out of steel, and came out of Georgia Tech and DHX. That's where they had the patents.
That's where they developed the technology.
And we got the license. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to see pretty soon the one for the sports car, which will be 320 horsepower. It will be 8 by 8 inches, and it's a five-phase motor.
Wow. And that'll weigh more or less?
That'll weigh 45 to 50 pounds.
45 to 50 pounds, 350 horsepower. Yeah. That's astonishing.
Yeah, and so, you know, we were talking before about the technology things here, and we're talking about cumulative technology. So if you take the architecture and you say, okay, we can get 40%.
Better fuel economy.
Better fuel economy. Okay, put that drivetrain in the car, you're going to get 40%. But look at the difference in the weight of the motor and the gearbox. And with that, you should have something more.
Because you're going to save a couple of hundred pounds at least,
yeah,
right?
So you should go further. Okay, let's just replace just the weight that's saved with the motor and the gearbox with more batteries. You'll go that much further again. And then we have a new thing that you'll see down there called Bicep, and that's as much as I'm going to say about it, except it connects all the batteries without having all the wires and the insulation and stuff.
And so you're picking up weight and space.
Yeah, weight, space, and manufacturing assembly costs. Mm-hmm. You know, each guy hooking up one of those batteries, that's a lot of time. And we know in production companies and line manufacturing, that's an expensive item. Mm-hmm. So it'll be cheaper. It'll be lighter, and we figure we'll save 50 to 60 pounds in that in a standard EV vehicle. And again, that will give you more range. Or replace that with batteries and get that much more range again.
Okay, and the batteries, you got anything special up your sleeve on that?
Well, we're just working with a standard lithium ion. There is another battery that's coming out, which we've looked at, which is about 8% lighter, which is helpful. The same amount of power. We are talking to several battery companies to ascertain if they can imagine what is the battery they want to launch 2 years from now. That's the one we want to be testing now. And wouldn't you like us to be doing this in the Le Mans GT car?
So what is it? I mean, so how do you guys get the performance out of that small package? I mean, I saw something, direct winding heat exchanger technology.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
What is that?
Well, one of the biggest problems with electric motors is heat. And when that motor you saw with the Coke can, when that motor's running, you can put your hand on it. Hmm. And it's an internal cooling process. Professor Rhett Mayer, who is the inventor of this, is here in town. He'll be at the show tomorrow. He can explain it better than I do. But he has an internal cooling system that cools at the core of where the heat is generated. Hmm. And it is exceptional. And when you can cool, and the more that you can cool, then as I understand it, that's the more power efficiency you get with your motor. Hmm.
Did you go to him, University of Georgia, right?
He's Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech, I'm sorry. Did you go to Georgia Tech and say, we're looking for this, or were they developing it, and who came to whom, I guess?
Okay, well, first of all, Georgia Tech's about 40 minutes from where we are,
sure,
in Braselton.
Yep.
Straight down I-85 and just fall off to the right before you get to downtown Atlanta. Mm-hmm. We're in the area. We have some people that interact at Georgia Tech. We recruit designers, we recruit engineers, and we heard about this electric motor. And so Ed Triolo and our company went down, and they demonstrated it. And he came back and he said, Don, I couldn't believe this. That motor was running. I was watching all the RPMs and whatever the electrical measurement is they use for determining power. And he says, I was putting my hand on it, and it wasn't even hot. And so I said, well, do you think you can get them up here next week? And they came, and we sat down and did a deal.
I visited you in your company in Braselton, and this is part of a press trip. I was maybe another dozen or so auto journalists 20 years ago this coming fall. And one of your PR guys, who you've probably long gotten rid of, maybe because of this reason, but...
Now I want to hear the story.
Told us that, at least at the time, you're not much of a car guy.
No.
You're still not much of a car guy.
I can honestly tell you, and people think I'm BSing here. I can honestly tell you, I have a new Jaguar four-door, the big one.
Yeah.
I don't know how to open. I've never looked at how to open a hood. And I've had it for 7 months. I'm not much of a car guy. Let me explain it. Do I like the challenge? Yeah, I raced in the Soapbox Derby when I was a kid, mm-hmm. built cars. Am I intrigued? And I hear all the chatter and the talk about this got so many valves and it's this horsepower and it's got this much torque. Now, I'm not really interested in that. I'm interested in the challenge of beating the guy over there. And what is it that we can put together?
You're the businessman behind it. Huh? And you're the businessman.
Well, but the technology fascinates you, right? The technology that, I mean, these little engines and aerodynamics and things like that. I mean,
well, like waiting. I mean, in 2002, 2003, we were the first to build all aluminum chassis and lightweight all aluminum cars, and our test score in the crash test, I think the standard then was 1,000. If you were above that, you failed. The industry was more or less between 700 and 500. And the Panos Esperanti was 150. It was in the top 1 percentile. And that was us using aluminum versus their steel. So we like those. I like that kind of a challenge. But, am I out driving fast every day or doing...
Well, but the other thing is that 20 years ago you were... The reason for the press trip is that you were introducing, and I think it might have even been the second generation of a retro sports car that was designed in Ireland, and you bought the rights and were starting to build.
It was my son that did all that. Yeah.
Your son did that.
Yeah, the Roadster.
Right, the Roadster. Right, that's why I couldn't remember the name. It's called the Roadster, and. I mean, this is before Petit Le Mans. Obviously, a lot has come since then, and I wonder if you talk a little bit about how you've gone from the Roadster 20 years ago and your son being involved in that largely.
Hold on. We got to take a quick commercial break here. It's going to be very brief. Hold that thought. Re-ask that question. Carmen, let's take a quick break right now because we got to give some time to our sponsors.
Lear Kinexus offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts, all delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
Okay, we're back, and I cut you off, both of you, but Todd sort of picked that thought up again. And
okay, well, so 20 years ago, your son was involved with the Pinot's Roadster.
He started all of this.
And he started all this, right. And you describe yourself as not much of a car guy, and a lot of fun to drive. And so how did you get from there, that one car, to, you know, Petit Le Mans, and now you've got the Delta Wing, which is spawning a road car, an electric car. How do you go from there to here? And you've raced at Le Mans. You had your own series.
Yeah.
How did that build up? Was that in your mind 20 years ago?
Well, I can tell you the truth. When we went to Sebring in 1997 with the first Panos GTR1, that was only the fifth race I'd ever been to in my life. So you can't say that I was a car guy. In 1996, Danny always had this thing about building cars. And you said Ireland. Somebody said Ireland. He went over to, because he grew up in Ireland during my tenure of Elan Pharmaceuticals, the technological company I formed. Mm-hmm. He grew up. He was educated there. He wanted to build cars, and he went back over. He went to Embry-Riddle. Then he helped me with designing some equipment and stuff for the vineyards at Chateau Lon. He went over to Ireland to wanted to go to work for a car company that was in Ireland. And he went down for an interview on a Friday, and they told him that, you know, they weren't interested. And on the following Monday, they filed for bankruptcy, and he
yeah, I know who that was.
At least they were honest with
him. He bought it, and that's where the Roadster came from.
Oh, okay.
So, and 96, going forward, that was about 1989. Mm-hmm. Going forward to 96, I said to him, you know, you need to have a racing heritage. These Roadsters are great, and people love them, and they're, you know, they're a handful, and they can, you know, perform. And he said, look, I was retiring in 97 from Elan Corporation. And he said, you're retiring next in January, so I'm busy doing the Esperante, which is the next car that came. And he said, you do the racing. So I didn't know anything about racing. And I said, you know, Danny, you've been with me every time I've been to race. There's been four of them. And he said, you'll do fine. He said, you'll do fine. So he then introduced me to a chap, Adrian Reinhardt. Excuse me just a minute.
Yeah, you guys keep on talking. I'm going to get everybody some water. I know Don wants one.
He introduced me to a guy, Adrian Reinhardt, and he mm-hmm. said, Adrian is coming over to look at the Roadster. And Adrian's a good English guy, and he came over and he said, your son tells me you might be interested in racing. And he said, well, what kind of racing are you interested in? Well, I had just seen the Steve McQueen movie, so I said Le Mans.
Le Mans, yeah.
Wow.
Thank you.
And he said, typical Brit, who's been a great guy, but he said, brilliant. And he said, what kind of a car do you want? I said, well, like his Roadster. He said, yeah, I said, like the Roadster. He said, yeah, that engine, that was the small block engine at that time. I said, yeah, just like the Roadster. He said, engine up front? I said, yeah, just like the Roadster. Nobody told me it hadn't been done for 30-some years. But he told me I was brilliant.
Here, I can get that.
He told me I was brilliant. And everything I agreed to do that he suggested, I was brilliant. So, but to tell you the truth, he built a great car for us in the GTR1. He designed it. He built it. He was on budget. Everything he represented to us was perfect. And he did a great job. So I have to give my hats off to him.
So for you, part of the racing, it sounds like it provides credibility for the other cars. So when you're talking about the plans for the GT and saying you want to race it, but it could be a family car too. So yeah. Is that how you see racing, as sort of a crucible that you put it through and then you're able to say, look, if it was able to do that, it'll certainly take the groceries home.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that's half. I hear the racing people always talking about from the racetrack, from the raceway to the roadway. Yeah, that's half. If you looked at the pictures of the field a year ago at Daytona, when they line up all the prototypes, there's only one prototype there. The rest of them look alike. They talk about, in racing, there's, you know, racing's funny. And when they talk about making it cheaper to race, or they talk about slowing the cars down, it never happens. It always becomes more expensive, and the cars always go faster.
Right.
So, you know, that's a myth. We're going to slow them down, and we're going to, you know, we're going to. It's going to be less expensive to race. That never happens. To me, racing is a way to prove something new. Like with our Esperantes and our cars, we were the light cars. We were the aluminum cars. They weren't going to rust, and they were very safe. And that made your cars, if you could take that weight out, it made your cars performance-wise better. As my son explained to me, it makes it better. So I like that concept of going to the next step. And with the Delta Wing, we really, and with cumulative technologies, keep finding a way to increase. To me, that is, that's the holy grail. That's what I want to do, because it's a challenge.
When I first heard of Panos, it was, if I've got this right, and maybe you can fill in the details, Ford Motor Company had done a very innovative concept car called the Contour, mm-hmm. whose structure was made up of aluminum extrusions, mm-hmm. sort of snapped into these cast aluminum nodes.
Exactly.
They had what they called the T-drive, very interesting arrangement. But my understanding is Ford did nothing with it. You know, they showed this brilliant design, and at the end of the auto show circuit, that was the last we saw of it. But my understanding is you guys ran with that technology, or at least the
extrusion. What year was this?
God, I'm trying to remember. I can't remember if it was late 80s or early 90s.
Yeah, well, we were doing it in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And I don't. Danny would know. My son would know okay. all that. I don't know that history.
Uh-huh.
But I do know we used extruded aluminum. We used the nose, and we were the first to be a customer of Superform for the body panels.
I remember that.
We were the first yes. customer of Superform, and you know, all this has gone again. Success is, you know, people say, I like this. People say, you know, you can die from 1,000 paper cuts. That's true. But if you give me enough 1,000 sheets of paper, I can also climb a mountain and look over to the future. And I think what we were talking about before in the industry and racing and with the companies, you get inside the fence. And maybe that guy inside the fence with those nodules and that extruded aluminum was about to find the door out. I don't know. But
yeah.
But we know that there's a fence. And sometimes you can escape and sometimes you can't.
Don, I'm intrigued by you because you invented the cigarette patch,
yeah.
right? So for people who don't want to smoke, and it's hard to kick the nicotine habit, they can wear the patch. You made a bunch of money on that. To go from that to where you're so heavily involved in automotive right now, I know you talked about part of it with your son, you know, per Gary's question there. But, you know, it's one thing to say, yeah, I'll dabble in this. But you've done more than dabble. I mean, you've plunged headfirst into doing generations of race cars. You bought the whole, racing circuit, the Le Mans, Petit Le Mans circuit here. You continue to do this. So, I mean, obviously, you got the bug. I mean, what's driving you to stay in this?
The challenge, because it's new. I mean, at my age, I'm not going to sit around and do something everybody else is doing. I want to do something that is different. And I'm doing a book in the future.
Tell the title, because I know what the title is, and it's a great title.
Drinking, Driving, and Drugs.
Drugs from the patch and the time release. I understand that's the real core technology, right?
Yeah.
Drinking because you've got wine wineries. Now. You've got a winery. You make how many bottles do
half
you do a year?
Bottles.
Half a million
half
bottles
a, million.
A year.
Wow.
And the driving we've been talking about.
Yeah.
You're having fun.
Pharmaceuticals, yeah. Drinking, Driving, and Drugs. Yeah.
Well,
so that's a great title. Don't do the book, but keep that title.
Don't take this wrong. It reminds me of Elon Musk, who started with PayPal, and now he's got SpaceX and Tesla. So, you know, maybe you ought to affect a South African accent and sell some stock.
Eli has nothing to worry about. I'm several generations different from him. I'm pleased and happy that I'm 81 years old today. And in fact, I've got more energy about this than when I look back. I had 4 or 5 years ago, but I'm not going to retire. I like to do things that are different. Even building a research pharmaceutical group in Ireland started in late 1969 into the 70s when it was emerging as a third world country. Mylan Laboratories I founded in West Virginia is the largest generic company in the world. I founded a West Virginia pharmaceutical company in 1960 in a condemned roller skating rink in White Sulphur Springs.
Wow. Which is where you're from, right? White Sulphur
My
Springs?
Wife is from Lewisburg, which, uh-huh. is, right
which is just right up the road.
Yeah, I
right.
went to Greenbrier Military Academy.
Wow.
But I was raised in a little town called Spencer, which you know where Speed is, right?
You, oh, yeah.
Speed or
yeah.
Walton?
Yep.
Well, Spencer's 50 miles from them. That's 50 miles from nowhere.
How many employees do you have at Panos Automotive?
In the Delta Wing Technology Group, we have about 160 employees.
Man, you do a lot with that amount of people.
Yeah.
And you're all, that's private, right? You know, that's all
that's privately
private, held?
Yeah. That's not, yet. It's still private, but.
See, that's what I mean. You could sell stock Tesla's worth $250 a share. Yeah. They're $260 these days.
I built Elon Corporation Ireland was the first Irish company to ever be publicly traded in the United States. So I did that. Milan Labs I did. Mm-hmm. Another company, Gensia C-Corp, I was chairman of. I've been down that route. But I like the challenge. It's not just that it's motor racing. It is what is the challenge? What can you do to make a difference? And also, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you need to leave it better than what you found it. You need to make some progress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So over your years and your time in racing, you've undoubtedly met all kinds of colorful characters. Can you share with us some of the people that you've met in your career that you really find to be fascinating?
One of the guys that I have a great respect for is Dr. Ulrich of Audi. He's done a great job.
Who runs their race team.
Yeah. And starting out, we were racing pretty competitively, and we could beat them. I had a lot of respect for him. Alan Springer from Porsche, who's retired, and I have a lot of respect for him. Mine would be more on the sports car side. Mm-hmm. A lot of respect for him. There's a young guy coming up in the ranks in Porsche called Walliser. I think he's a coming star. On the racing or the administrative side, I was lucky to get the services of Scott Atherton to lead the building of the American Le Mans Series. Mario Andretti, I was delighted to have him drive our car at Le Mans,
that's quite a get.
Yeah, he started me smoking again. By
the way. The guy who invented the patch is now smoking again.
Yeah.
So how did that happen? How did Mario cause you to start smoking?
It was about 4 in the morning at Indianapolis, and we're in the garages, and you know, at Le Mans, it's 7-mile track. And got the headphones.
At the Indianapolis curve, you're saying? The
Indianapolis curve, right, yeah. At Le Mans.
Right.
And all of a sudden, car, I forget what number, car so-and-so, which was Andretti, off at Indianapolis and hit the tire barriers. And that's about 140-mile-an-hour corner. And the radios went dead. And I thought, oh, my God, I just killed one of the great race car drivers of all time. And a guy was walking by lighting a cigarette, and I just reached over and took it.
And that could have only happened in France these days, by the way.
Right.
So that was in 2000. So that
and then
was,
after Mario was okay, you still...
Yeah. He got back. He was driving with Brabham and Magnussen. He got back. He was a little sore. He had taken a big hit, but they got the car back out.
Mm-hmm.
But he is a hell of a guy and a hell of a nice guy. I mean, he's
the perfect spokesman for the Indy Racing Series now, and for racing in general. But that
he
especially.
Is. And the other one which I got to know, actually knew him before I got into racing, was Paul Newman. Hmm. He had come to Ireland and he built one of his ranches, villages there for kids. And my wife and I built one of the houses for the children. And I got to know him from that. And then when he, I don't remember exactly how it happened, but he became aware we were going to build this GTR1 car. And actually, when we got it in, he was the guy that tested it first at Road Atlanta.
No kidding.
And then he drove for us at Lime Rock with Doc Mundy.
Mm-hmm.
Race car drivers, if I could have 3, it would be Alan McNish, J.J. Leto, David Brabham.
No kidding.
Alan McNish, because if he's a lap down and it's coming the end of the race, he's going to win. J.J. Leto is the best traffic driver that's out there. He can get his way through traffic like nobody I've ever seen. And David Brabham, because he has 90% of all those qualities, but he's cerebral and he knows how to set up a car. So that would be my pick for Le Mans driver's team. Only one of those was my driver, by the way, but the others drove for other people. But
right.
That would be the three that I would
vote. Your dream team.
Yeah, dream team.
Are you going back to Le Mans with your car this year?
No, we won't be going with a car. I will be at Le Mans. I'm a Spirit of Le Mans winner, and I participate in that over there every year. I'm taking my wife and our daughter and her husband and her son and his wife. This was the great epiphany of life. I woke up last year when I was 80 and realized that all of my children are grandparents. That's a big thought. And so we're taking them to Le Mans this year.
So you're gonna imbue a new generation with the bug.
Exactly, exactly.
Do you have any dreams of returning to Le Mans
with the Delta Wing GT?
And can you talk a little bit about the timing on that? I know we discussed that a little bit before, but
yeah, I'd like to do it. I'd like to try and get it there next year, because we'll do it with the petrol version first, because we can do a small volume approval. I mean, we're not going to make 20,000 cars off the bat. Come on, you know. So you can get a small volume approval with an approval in the EU. Why can't we apply? That's what we'll do. And then after that, I want to race the electric GT. And that, what I said, is the Holy Grail.
What are your dreams?
Race it at Le Mans, you mean?
The Holy Grail at Le Mans is to race an electric car and be able to race as long as a Ferrari and a Porsche can on a tank of fuel.
Wow.
And to change the batteries as quick as they can fuel and compete with them.
So compete just as a car, not as an electric car.
Yeah, in other words, the electric car to compete with their petrol.
And that last item, compete with means do you hope? What are your hopes for actually getting the car in a series to compete head to head? Because it's been so far raced as a demonstration model, right?
Well, as we all know, there's a lot of different series out there. You can pick your different races. You can go to the Nürburgring, or you can do different ones. Ideally, you'd like to race in a series, and then you can get points and championships and all that. But you can still race in other events and gain it. So devoid of the politics, I would like to race in a series. But as we all know, whether it's presidential politics today or racing politics tomorrow, there's always politics. So we'll see what happens.
You know, Gary asked you before how you track down this electric motor. I'm intrigued. The more and more you talk, you're all about this disruptive
cumulative technology. Yeah.
Okay, so you gave us a little bit of the story. Your PR guy, Ed Triolo, goes down and sees this engine. Yeah. What about all the other stuff? I mean, how do you keep track of what might be out there? How do you know this is the one to bet on?
I got a great personal assistant. Her name is Sherry, and she organizes me every morning. God bless her. But, you know, we're talking about a battery, and the people that developed that battery at Georgia Tech, Rhett Mayer and his group, DHX Motors, they do work on the motor. I don't work on it.
No. But how do you find out about all this stuff? You seem to be somebody who says, you said it yourself, I don't want to do what everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
I want to bring something new to the party here. You know, you're never going to go win if you're trying to do what everybody else is doing. You got to do something different. Yeah. But I'm trying to figure out, is it just serendipity you trip over these technologies? Or is there a plan to go out? Or how does it happen?
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know quite how to explain it, but I think in our lives, things are always passing us by or through our fingers or come on our radar screen. And basic instinct is I like it, I don't like it, or that's good or that's bad. I'll never watch that show again or whatever. And I think I told you in the beginning when I first heard about the Delta Wing, when I first saw it, I thought kind of the same as everybody else. But then it came on the radar screen again, and I paid attention. And I think that, to me, I just like things that are different. That's what I kind of look for.
Well, you must have among your employees, among that 160 or so, including engineers and designers and so on, people who obviously they're not working at Ford, they're not working at GM, they're not working at Toyota, whatever. So they're looking for a lot of that too, right?
Right. The chap that did the design at Multimatic on the new Ford Mustang, he works for me. He worked for me
the
before.
The Ford GT.
The Ford GT.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
He worked for you?
Yeah, before he went to Multimatic, and now he's back working for me again. I have a chap that's COO, came out of Oak Ridge Laboratories. I have a bunch of engineers been with us for all through the period of the Panos growth. You know, Panos seems like a new name, but it's 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe that. You know, it just seems like it was yesterday.
It does.
We have composite people. We have all that stuff. We've been doing that since you were there. I think we were doing composites
mm-hmm.
then.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was 2000 or maybe
1996.
We were starting to do that. And what I did was I decided Elon Motorsports and Elon Motors came about because I got tired of having to go to England for everything I wanted in racing. And for having motors, it didn't work. And I was having motors built by people that built really good motors, but they only raced in two-hour races, NASCAR races, et cetera, et cetera. You know, Mons is 24 hours. So I decided we'll build in our own engine department. We'll build our own carbon fiber facility. And bingo, things start happening.
Well, then you mentioned earlier in passing that you started using the Superform technology, and as I remember, that's an aerospace process that allows you to form large sheets of material.
Yeah.
I mean,
we were the
to
first.
John's point, I mean, how the hell did you find out about that?
My son found out about that and got him in. The chap was head of it then just retired last week. I'm trying to remember his name, but he that was doing it then. I guess if you march around the forest long enough, you'll finally get poison ivy. I don't know.
That's a good way to put it. You know, probably a good place to wrap this conversation up, too.
Hey, anyway, I want to tell you one
more. Tell us one more. You bet.
Okay. I'll tell you about the Le Mans win. Esperante GT.
This is what year?
2006. We'd won Sebring with Neumannhaus team and Multimatic. Sebastian Bourdais, we'd won Sebring. And there was a team in England, LNT, Lawrence Tomlinson, who came to us, who'd raced other cars at Le Mans and said he wanted to race in Esperante in January of 2006. Bought the car, and went to Le Mans. We had a big chat about strategy and all that stuff, nice, and we were supportive of his racing our car. And he won. And so that won Panos with him, a gentleman driver, 7 seconds off of Tom Kimber-Smith and 4 seconds off the next driver in the car. Not only did they win, but they set the record for most distance traveled, okay, as a GT up at that time. And it was so great that he came on and said, let's go up to the podium. You know, he was all excited. And I said, no. You guys, a privateer team beating the factory Porsches, factory Ferraris, the Aston Martins, you guys go up there, you get, and it's all your glory. And he, by then, had become a very good friend. And I said, I'm going back to the car. I'm going back to the chateau. And I'm walking out back to where the team owners could park their cars. And down the hill comes this big German guy. I mean, he was like a house. He had a hat on, a Porsche. He had Porsche on his arms, Porsche on his chest. And he came down and he saw me. Well, as you can see, I've got ginger hair, so I can't hide very well anywhere. And he says, are you Don Panos? And I said, yes. And he says, it's a good thing Patrick Long had a problem in that Porsche, or you would never have won that race. And I looked at him, and he was big, and I looked up, and I said, what about the other 13 Porsches? And then I beat a hasty retreat.
That's great. Well, Don Panos, thanks so much. This is a dream come true for me to have you on Autoline After Hours. It's fantastic. I love what you're doing. Keep it up. I know you will anyway.
Yeah, we're going to keep going.
That's excellent.
And come to the show down to stop by the show. You'll see the motor.
Cool.
You'll see bicep. That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good deal. Todd Lassa, thanks so much for stopping in for today's show as well.
Thanks for having me, John.
And Gary, we'll keep on doing this.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great.
Good deal. You bet.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.